The CIA is pushing crack in the ghettos of LA, while the food crops in Colombia get sprayed by the DEA. The FBI is reading your email with something called the carnivore, while the rich are getting richer and the poor are staying poor. They're launching nuclear-powered ships up into space. One little accident could wipe out half the human race. They're putting radioactive waste into your silverware, or maybe your toaster, or perhaps your wheelchair. The Air Force is bombing Iraq every other day. They don't like the government, so the children have to pay. And the ozone hole is growing, the sheep are going blind, while the U.S. spends more on arms than the rest of the world combined. Journalists are getting fired from San Jose to Atlanta when they write about reality, not a fluff piece for Fanta. A death threat every week, and sometimes life is short when the truth is too dangerous for someone to report. And who will tell the people that free speech is a ruse? The corporations run the country, and then they make the news. Is it media or mind control, heroic victories or crimes? Who will tell the people that we're living in these times? The cancer rates are skyrocketing, though people are smoking less. If you live near a nuke, your life is bound to be a mess. Clean water's almost gone all over the earth, and what's left they want to privatize and see how much it's worth. Chevron is gunning down the students of Nigeria, turning the land to waste while the babies die of diphtheria. And the temperatures are rising, the world's forests are on fire. Pretty soon Brazil will be one raging funeral pyre. And who will tell the people that free speech is a ruse? The corporations run the country, and then they make the news. Is it media or mind control, heroic victories or crimes? Who will tell the people that we're living in these times? One in three adult Americans cannot read or write, and their children go to bed hungry every night. 2 million U.S. citizens are rotting behind bars, and while they're there, they're working hard building parts for cars. The Army's running torture schools to keep the earth under control, and they're relocating Navajos so they can mine some extra coal. Our taxes pay McDonald's to sell tumors in Shanghai, while 100,000 poison vets are just about to die. And who will tell the people that free speech is a ruse? The corporations run the country, and then they make the news. Is it media or mind control, heroic victories or crimes? Who will tell the people that we're living in these times? And the people are resisting wherever you may go, and this is the single biggest fact they don't want you to know. From New Delhi to New Mexico, there are battles going on, and the darkest hour is just before the dawn. In Berkeley and New York, they're raiding radio stations, trying to turn the voice of the people into the voice of the corporations. Will we seize the airwaves, wipe the sweat off of our brow, stand and face the beast and shout democracy now? Who will tell the people that free speech is a ruse? The corporations run the country, and then they make the news. Is it media or mind control, heroic victories or crimes? Who will tell the people that we're living in these times? That we're living in these times? That we're living in these times?
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just joining us, we're listening to a debate on state surveillance between former CIA and NSA director Michael Hayden and Harvard Law professor Alan Dershowitz. And on the other side is journalist Glenn Greenwald and Reddit co-founder Alexei Bohannon. They argue about, be it resolved, state surveillance is a legitimate defense of our freedoms. Team Opposed won the resolution with a 13% vote gain. Professor Dershowitz continues his opening statement.
I believe it's possible to strike that balance in a manner that protects our freedoms, and that is where our effort should be directed. Surveillance, properly limited and appropriately conducted, can promote liberty, protect life, and help us defend our freedoms. Our enemies, especially those who target civilians, have one major advantage over us. They are not constrained by morality or legality. We have an advantage over them. In addition to operating under the rule of law, we have developed through hard work and extensive research technological tools that allow us to monitor and prevent their unlawful and lethal actions. Such technological tools helped us break the German and the Japanese code during the Second World War. They helped us defeat fascism. They helped us in the Cold War. And they are helping us now in the hot war against terrorists who would bomb this theater if they had the capacity to do so. You're going to hear again that there are only excuses that are being offered, that terrorism is really not a serious problem, or that American policy is as terroristic as the policy of Al-Qaeda. I don't think you're going to accept that argument. We must not surrender our technological advantage. Instead, we must constrain it within the rule of law by constructing appropriate processes governing its use. I urge you to vote against rejecting all state surveillance properly regulated as a legitimate defense of our freedoms. I urge you to vote yes. Thank you very much.
You can tell a trial lawyer through and through, right down to the final second there. Congratulations, Alan. That was terrific.
Access Sacramento broadcasts great speeches and interviews every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m., or you can get the podcast at greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Glenn, you're going to get the last word in the opening statements. This next 6 minutes is yours.
Good evening. So I want to begin by doing something that I'm very unlikely to do again for the next hour and a half, which is vehemently agree with something that General Hayden said. And what it is that he said at the beginning is absolutely right, which is that in order to assess the resolution that we're debating tonight, which is state surveillance a legitimate defense of our freedoms? The first and I think most important question to ask is, what is state surveillance? And the reason I say that is because if state surveillance were about targeting in a discriminating and focused way people who are plotting terrorist attacks against our country or other countries, or are otherwise planning harm, there would be no debate. There would be no controversy. We could all end right now and go home. Professor Dershowitz referenced these sinister radicals who are opposed to all surveillance and never want the government ever to spy on anybody. I've been writing about this topic for 8 years, and I have never met a single person who believes that. That is a straw man fantasy that does not exist. Unfortunately, the actual system of state surveillance that the United States and its surveillance partners have constructed almost entirely in the dark has almost nothing to do with that. It is not what Professor Dershowitz spent the last 6 minutes defending, a limited system of focused surveillance designed to protect us from people who want to blow up the auditorium. If it were that, there'd be nothing to debate. What state surveillance actually is best understood by the NSA's own documents and own words, which I think, as you know, I happen to have a lot of. And that phrase that they use over and over again to describe what the system of surveillance is that they've constructed is collect it all. There's this remarkable and very poignant point, which is that the United States government and its defenders and officials like General Hayden have become extremely adept, because of the secrecy behind which they operate, at presenting this very mild, pleasant, moderate picture about what it is that they do when they talk in public about those programs. They're very good at doing that. Unfortunately, those descriptions are wildly disparate from what they actually do and what they actually say in private when they think that nobody's watching them. Over and over in the documents of the NSA are not these mild pay-ons to the need for targeted surveillance. It's the opposite. It is aggressive boasting about the system of indiscriminate, suspicionless surveillance that they have constructed in the dark, where entire populations, hundreds of millions of people who are guilty of nothing, have their communications routinely monitored and surveilled and stored. There's one particular document that I find incredibly striking that was presented by the NSA in November of 2011 at a conference they called the Signals Development Conference, where they boast to their four partners about what it is that they've done. And this document is entitled New Collection Posture, Our New Collection Posture. And it says in a chart, collect it all, sniff it all, know it all, process it all, exploit it all. A federal court in the United States, a George Bush-appointed right-wing pro-national security federal judge, in December of last year, ruled that what the NSA is doing is a profound violation of the rights of millions of Americans, and he described this program as, quote, the almost Orwellian technology that is unlike anything that could have been conceived in 1979. William Binney, a mathematician with the NSA for 30 years who resigned in protest over what the NSA has become, told the Democracy Now! Program in 2012, quote, they've assembled on the order of 20 trillion transactions between U.S. citizens with other U.S. citizens. The Washington Post in 2011, before Edward Snowden even emerged, reported that the NSA every day, collects 1.7 billion emails and telephone calls simply between and among American citizens, let alone what they collect on foreign nationals. That is the surveillance state that we are here to debate. It is unlike anything even science fiction writers in the 1950s can conceive of, and it is the opposite of the limited and focused program that our opponents are attempting to convince you exists. Now, I just want to make one point before my time is up about something Professor Dershowitz asked, which is, what is the reason for this? And of course, they need a reason, because as citizens, I think we all understand the inherent inappropriateness of having the government monitor and collect data about all of its citizens and with whom we communicate and who is emailing us and what it is that we're saying. And so the answer they say over and over again that they're going to tell you tonight over and over is one word, terrorism. They use that word because it packs a very powerful emotional punch. And Professor Dershowitz said, if you understand it, if you want to claim that it's a pretext, that's some sort of conspiracy theory. The U.S. government has used terrorism as the pretext for everything it has done in the past 12 years, from erecting a torture regime to invading and destroying Iraq to imprisoning people without charges in Guantanamo to collecting the communications of all citizens throughout the globe, including its own. One need not be a conspiracy buff to think that is a pretext, but just have a basic knowledge of history. And U.S. courts and government institutions over the last year have all said these programs have nothing to do with terrorism. Thank you.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, four very formidable debaters. What talent on the stage tonight. We're going to allow them to extend their arguments a little bit further now, timed two-minute rebuttals, where they're going to weigh in on what they've heard from their opponents. We're going to ask the pro team to go first as a pair. General Hayden, you spoke at the top of the debate, so let's hear your rebuttal now.
Okay. 2 minutes is not long enough to unpack all the inaccuracies of the last 24. Alexis, I actually agree with a lot of your stuff. The balkanization of the Internet would be a human tragedy, and we can talk about that in the after prom party, how we might want to do that. Glenn, I don't agree with anything you said. A couple quick points, because time is short. Alexis, you just kind of put the surveillance state out there as a given. You need to define that. I agree with the American industry has suffered because of the stories that some people have written. American industry is doing nothing more than what industries around the world are doing for their own intelligence services. And American industry is being unfairly singled out and punished because of that. A whole bunch of other things. Mention massive surveillance. We do bulk collection. That's different from massive surveillance. We can talk about that later. Glenn says we collect everything there is. NSA actually, on any given day, collects, listen up carefully, it's a big number, collects 0.00004% of global internet traffic. I have no idea what 1.7 billion intra-American email collection means. That is simply not happening. What we have here are people trying to keep you safe, and I've got an image coming out that the people who work and lead NSA are like that character in The Simpsons, you know, Mr. Burns, after finally they get to go, excellent, excellent. We got a lot more to unpack, but you get the drift. Thanks.
Extra points at the Monk debates for any Simpson references from this point forward. Alan Dershowitz, your rebuttal.
I think we've heard two straw men from the other side. The first straw man is raising the issue of torture and rendition. That proves my point. I'm a liberal Democrat who voted against President Bush and voted for Obama. I hate torture. I hate rendition. I'm against all of that. But does anyone doubt that that was motivated genuinely, if erroneously, by a desire to stop terrorism? Do you think that President Bush ordered these horrible things to be done just because he likes torture or likes rendition? He may have been wrong, but that was his motive. That was his goal. That was his purpose, to stop terrorism. And so let's debate the merits of whether surveillance is good or bad, not the motives. Second, the argument is that, well, if we only could just surveil terrorists, if we could only just point terrorists, if only we could live in a world like that. That is a real straw man. Of course we wouldn't be having this debate, because we wouldn't be debating you. If you can figure out a way of identifying terrorists and only terrorists without the need to sometimes intrude on the conversation of somebody who might be talking to a terrorist or might know somebody who is a terrorist, I would be thrilled. But it's in the nature of life that, of course, one has to overpredict. We all know when it comes to guilt or innocence or punishment, better 10 guilty go free than one innocent be wrongly confined. But that's not the rule for preventive intelligence. When it comes to preventive intelligence, it's far better that a few people have some intrusion than that one innocent person whose death could have been prevented by an act of terrorism is prevented. We have to overpredict. We have to overuse. The question is how much, how to control it, how to constrain it. I think we can have enough surveillance that is consistent with liberty. Thank you.
Glenn, let's have you up, and then Alexis will allow you to close at the other side. Alexis is chomping at the bit here to get at Alan and Michael.
So just on the question of motive, I actually don't care at all about motive, primarily because I don't think I or anyone else can divine it. I don't know why George Bush and General Hayden and the other officials in the United States invaded Iraq and destroyed it, or why they tortured people, or why they put people in prison without charge. I only know that it was incredibly wrong to do, and that is the same of surveillance. And I bring it up because it is the same mindset, the idea that if you say the words terrorism over and over and over enough, you can put people in fear and justify whatever it is you want to do. As far as whether or not this surveillance is actually about terrorism, let me share with you what people inside the U.S. government have said on that question so that you don't have to take either our word for it or theirs. The federal court I referenced earlier that ruled that the NSA was violating the rights of Americans said about the claim that it was for terrorism, quote, the government does not cite a single case in which analysis of the NSA's bulk metadata collection actually stopped a terrorist attack. A presidential review panel appointed by President Obama of his closest aides on December 18th issued a report saying, our review suggests that the information contributed to terrorist investigations by the use of metadata was not essential to preventing attacks and could readily have been attained in a timely manner using conventional court orders, which is my answer to Professor Dershowitz about how else we can target people and find out what we need to know. Three Democratic senators in President Obama's own party who are on the Intelligence Committee and have access to all classified information wrote an op-ed in November 29th, 25th, the New York Times, and they wrote, quote, the usefulness of the collection program has been greatly exaggerated. We have yet to see any proof that it provides real, unique value in protecting national security. They hope that they will blind you with emotion, and I hope you will focus on the evidence and the facts.
Now it's my turn. All right. Bring in the nerds. All right, well, I'm happy, General Hayden, I'm happy we're in accord, at least for the technological cost to this. I spoke earlier about the economic cost, but I want to reiterate the fact that I am the nerd here, right? And you all didn't hear a rebuttal about the real technological problems. The fact that the mass surveillance we are doing actually makes us less secure. And this is from a technological standpoint here. And this is something that we, as Canadians, as Americans, have every reason to be worried about. We should be working to make the internet stronger, to making it more secure, because it benefits all of us. And on the issue of, oh, well, I suppose everyone else is doing it too, I don't know about you all, but I don't want to settle. Our nations have never settled for, well, it's good enough for everyone else, right? Our nations have been founded on principles that cherish things like a right to privacy and a right to freedom and encourage the kind of amazing things that have come out of it as a result of those policies. And so what we're offering you here is this. The surveillance state has run amok. Technology that's enabled us to send selfies 24/7, not that valuable, has also enabled us to be spied upon 24/7. And there is a way. There is a way for due process. It was good enough for centuries before we had this technological innovation, and there is still a method to rein in this madness. But it starts by making the network more secure and not less, and not doing the things that makes everyday Canadians and Americans wonder who's listening, who's watching. That's not the America I was raised in. That's not the Canada I presume you all were raised in. And I hope, with all of us together, we can get this right. Thank you.
Well, the battle lines in this debate could not be clearer. Now we're going to move on to our cross-examination period, where we're going to get these two teams of debaters to engage with each other directly. I want to start with a question that comes out of, I think, the real points of clash here in the opening part of this debate. And it's around what are the risks that we're defending ourselves against by virtue of having these programs. And, you know, General Hayden, let me ask you, you were there at September 11. If these programs were in place back then, what we have now, could you have stopped that attack?
Yeah.
Could you have prevented it from happening? I think that's the big litmus test that's on a lot of people's minds.
Yeah. First of all, let me point out, and I appreciate the question on terrorism, all right? But this isn't just about terrorism, all right? This is about legitimate foreign intelligence activity on the part of free people to keep themselves safe and free. Terrorism is a big deal, but we do this for lots of good, legitimate reasons. Now, to answer your question, if this program, and here we're talking about the metadata program, which is about terrorism, because the only reason you can use the metadata is to stop terrorism, no other purpose. If we'd have had this in place, we would have known that two of the muscle guys on the Pentagon flight, the plane that hit the Pentagon, the American Airlines plane, we would have detected that they were in San Diego. It was Nawaf al-Hazmi and Khalid al-Midhar. They had gone to a meeting in Kuala Lumpur. We had lost lock on them there. Shame on us. I wish we had kept it. But then they came to the United States, unbeknownst to us. NSA actually intercepted their phone calls from San Diego, where they were staying, back to a known al-Qaeda safe house in Yemen. We listened in. Now, the trigger, okay, the selector, as it's called, why were we listening to that phone call? Was because we were covering the safe house in Yemen. And as the call was being made, and, you know, those electrons were flitting through the global grid, NSA collection devices saw the number of the house in Yemen, and we listened to the call a little more than half a dozen times. Three or four times, there was enough stuff interesting on the call that we actually completed an intelligence report about it, because the safe house in Yemen was notorious. Nothing in the content of the call, nothing in the physics of the intercept told us that the other end of the call was in San Diego. The way it was intercepted, the San Diego number doesn't show up in the technology. And they didn't say anything in the call like, love the weather, the fleet's in, we're going to the zoo tomorrow. That would have suggested they were in San Diego. If we would have had the metadata program, the 215 program, as a matter of routine, we'd have thrown that selector, the Yemeni number, at that mass of American phone bills and phone connections, and simply would have said, hey, anybody in here talk to this number in Yemen? And kajing, the San Diego number would have popped up. Now, that's all NSA can do with that. NSA then would have handed that number to the FBI. The FBI would have kicked in the door in San Diego and would have found Nawaf al-Hazmi and Khalid al-Midhar, two people legally in the United States. They probably would have leaned on them enough, though, and found some reason to push them out of the country, and off they would have went. And so two of the muscle guys on the Pentagon flight wouldn't have been there. To answer your question, I suspect al-Qaeda then may have called the raid off. We don't know what these guys gave up to the FBI. We don't know what else the Americans know. They found these two guys. What if they're laying in wait? Call Muhammad Atta, call the other guys, we're off. I suspect that would have happened. I can't guarantee it. But wait, there's more.
Yeah, well,
one more
I want to bring the other side.
One more point.
Very brief.
All right. If that would have happened, we still would have not gotten credit for stopping a terrorist attack because we would not have known what we had done. Thank you.
PBS's budget will be zero. Watch the Congress pluck our TV hero. Pack up all those feathered clothes. Hit the road, pointy nose. Bye, bye, Big Bird. PBS, what a commie quad. Liberal shows, that's all they got. Left wing, Big Bird. Sick. Barney, bye-bye.
Hey, no, no, wait, not the bird, not the bird through the dinosaur's history, but the bird is in. Yeah, this big bird can make you rich in the right market niche.
Big bird beer ads.
No more teaching alphabets, let him sell cigarettes.
Big bird camel.
Buy peas and carrots from Big Bird's eye.
Let's divide his profits up in thirds, guy.
He needs a series, his own show.
The Big Bird 90210. Big Bird.
Hey, I can hook you up with Feather Locklear.
Bye bye.
And now, messages from Access Sacramento.